tomorrow, but he also said, don't worry, it's not directed at you. I don't feel this way about you. I think you're a victim of left-wing propaganda. And basically gave Pinochet a pat on the back. Pinochet actually did respond, and the conversation went on. Pinochet actually complained to Kissinger about the human rights legislation that was being passed by Senator Kennedy and then Congressman Tom Harkin and others, basically placing human rights criteria on U.S. ability to give military aid and economic aid to the Pinochet government. He said, and basically Pinochet complained. So in his memoir, Kissinger relates this, that Pinochet said to me that Russia supports their people 100%, but you have a punitive system for your friends. The United States, you know, is bad to its friends. And then Kissinger writes in his memoir, I return to my underlying theme that any major help from us would realistically depend on progress on human rights. That's what he writes in his memoir. Well, here's the memorandum of conversation. This is what he actually said when Pinochet complained. He said, there is merit in what you say. It is a curious time in the United States. It is unfortunate. We have been through Vietnam and Watergate. We will have to wait till the 1976 elections. We welcome the overthrow of the communist-inclined government here. We are not out to weaken your position. And then later in the meeting, in the memorandum of conversation, Kissinger says to Pinochet, we want to help, not undermine you. You did a great service to the West in overthrowing Allende. In the United States, as you know, we are sympathetic with what you are trying to do here. That passage did not make it into his memoir, obviously. But now we have documents like that, and they will help us, I think, begin to rewrite what has been a distorted history of these kinds of relations. Now let me move quickly to the issue of the pursuit of justice, because this is the most elusive and difficult area. There are many, many victims, thousands and thousands of victims in Chile. Among them have been some prominent American families. This horrible atrocity, two actual atrocities right after the coup, took the lives of two American young men, Charles Horman, about whom the movie Missing was made, and a second U.S. student, Frank Teruggi, who was killed also in the National Stadium after being taken from his apartment by a military patrol. Both of their deaths were covered up by the Pinochet regime at the time. It took years for information to be uncovered. The families of both Teruggi and Horman suspected that the United States knew far more about what had happened than anybody let on. In the late 1970s, the Horman family, Ed Horman, who's played by Jack Lemmon in the movie Missing. How many people have seen the movie? Quite a few of you. You remember that movie. Sissy Spacek played Joyce Horman. And the Horman family, Joyce and her father-in-law, Ed, brought a suit against U.S. officials. One of the reasons they brought this suit was because if they were involved in a legal case, they had more pressure to get documents declassified. And one of the documents they got declassified was this one, which is by a State Department, three State Department officials in 1976. And you'll notice that at the bottom of this page, page one, there's a very significant paragraph blacked out. Now, on the next page of the document that was given to the family in, this document was given to the family in 1980, the next page, you'll see that at the top, a continuation of that paragraph, or second paragraph, is also blacked out on page two. This is the document as it was given to the family the family of the most celebrated, notorious case of an American being killed after the coup in Chile. 20 years later, the same document was declassified again under the special Clinton Declassification Project. And let's see what it looked like. Page one at the bottom. Intact. Based on what we have, we are persuaded that the government of Chile sought Horman and felt threatened enough to order his immediate execution. The government of Chile may have believed this American could be killed without negative fallout from the U.S. government. There is some circumstantial evidence to suggest U.S. intelligence may have played an unfortunate part in Horman's death. At best, it was limited to providing or confirming information that helped motivate his murder by the government of Chile. At worst, U.S. intelligence was aware the government of Chile saw Horman in a rather serious light, and U.S. officials did nothing to discourage the logical outcome of government of Chile paranoia. These two key passages were kept from the family for 20 years by the keepers of the secrets in our U.S. government. They did not want to admit in 1976 that the U.S. government actually knew that Horman had been executed by the Chilean military. And they certainly did not want to admit, faced with a lawsuit, faced with a human rights movement and pressure in Congress, that the United States had had anything to do with it. And yet these State Department officials shared the exact same suspicion, which was the premise of the movie Missing, which was that the intelligence community, both in the military and perhaps in the CIA, had had contacts with the Chilean military and had either led them to believe that Horman could be killed without consequences or had passed some intelligence on his activities, on leftist activities, that they perceived him and Teruggi to be conducting in Chile to the Chilean military, which helped prompt them to go ahead and kill both Horman and Teruggi. Now, this is a case that remains unsolved, and I hope will be solved with the use of these types of documents. I believe that these documents were taken to Chile. I went with Joyce Horman in December of the year 2000, she presented these documents to a judge in Chile, the same judge prosecuting Augusto Pinochet, she filed a case in Chile, not against U.S. officials, as she had tried to sue here, but against Chileans, against the Chilean military officials who ran the National Stadium, who were in charge of the prisoners there, and who obviously gave the order to kill Charles Horman and Frank Teruggi, as well as those soldiers who actually implemented that order and fulfilled the execution. Through that avenue, which was made possible by the presentation of new documents from the United States, she has been able, I think, to open up a whole new route, seeking evidence, depositions, identifying the Chilean officials who were in the National Stadium. And I'm crossing my fingers that that will lead to identifying those culpable, not only in the case of Horman and Teruggi, but also perhaps as much as 300 other prisoners who were held in the National Stadium in the 3 weeks following the coup and who were executed at the time. One of the most substantive massacres in Latin America that ever happened in one place, those 300 being killed over a three-week period in the National Stadium, one of the initial massacres under the Pinochet regime. There's a second case, and let me just share it with you, put on the next document. Even a more famous case now is a case that has taken on ever greater symbolism with the act of international terrorism that took place in our country September 11th of 2001. before the plane that hit the Pentagon that day, killing all aboard as well as some 270 officials and civilians at the Pentagon building itself, before that attack, the most egregious act of international terrorism ever to take place in our nation's capital was this car bombing orchestrated by Pinochet's secret police that claimed the life of Orlando Letelier, who had been an Allende ambassador to Washington, and a colleague of his, Ronnie Carpen Moffat. This is a CIA cable on the Letelier car bombing, dated October 6, 1978. If you can push it up just a little bit, you'll see the bottom. The CIA has blacked out all of the routing information. You don't know who the source is, but you can kind of tell by reading it closely that it's somebody within the military. This is the first major intelligence cable that the CIA sent from Santiago, reporting on what it had learned about this atrocity. And the car bombing was on September 21st. This cable is dated the 6th of October, so about 15 or 16 days later. Page 2, you will see, is almost entirely blacked out, entirely redacted. You know, under national security grounds, somehow letting us read what's under those blacked out lines would compromise the CIA sources and methods. Of course, this was a case of international terrorism. You'd think that it would be more important to solve this case rather than hide the information. This document was given to the Letelier and Moffat families also back in 1981 when they sued not the U.S. government, but they sued the Chileans, and they sought U.S. documents, and they filed a Freedom of Information Act case and got quite a few documents, but most of them looked like this. 20 years later, again, under this new batch of documents, we see just a few, a little bit more information, and let's see what it looks like, just so you... Now you see that at least part of page 2 has been released. And what does it tell us? The source, whose name is blacked out there next to point 2, believes that the Chilean government is directly involved in Letelier's death and feels that investigations into the incident will so indicate. And then the source describes a meeting, which obviously is blacked out there because that would give away who he is and what he, you know, what his place in the Chilean government is. And describes that Pinochet himself had basically fingered Letelier, had brought up the issue of Letelier's criticism and deemed it unacceptable. In other words, the source is basically saying Pinochet authorized this assassination by telling his secret police officials that Letelier's criticism of the Chilean government was unacceptable. And then we would learn a whole lot more about where that information came from if they would, you know, release the rest of the document. But so the Letelier and Moffat families have also learned just from this one new page that all these years, the CIA, from the initial days after the assassination, had a source that told them that the Chilean government was responsible and that Pinochet had basically set this in motion. They didn't have access to this document. Instead, what happened? The CIA basically told the Washington Post, the New York Times, and Newsweek magazine, only days after they sent this document, that they felt that the Chilean government couldn't possibly be responsible for this atrocity, for this act of international terrorism, because the bomb was too crude, because nobody in the Chilean government ever would have believed that they could get away with this, and because it would have a negative impact on Chile's image. Even though they had this document in their possession, this intelligence, they planted these stories in the U.S. press And they stood there in the U.S. press and for over 2 years until Justice Department investigators finally got a break in the case and were able to identify the Chilean secret police officials who were involved in this act of international terrorism. Finally, what can these documents do in terms of history and accountability? And I think they can do everything. I don't think we're going to have officials like Pinochet or Henry Kissinger ever admitting to the atrocities that they engaged in, what they knew, when they knew it, what their function was. But we have so many documents now that tell us that in some ways we don't have to wait for them to admit these things. I mean, these documents will be used in a variety of ways. The family of a Chilean general who was killed in the fall of 1970, his death was the equivalent in Chile to the Kennedy assassination here. It was the first major political assassination in 40 or 50 years in Chile. He was the commander-in-chief of the Chilean armed forces, head of the Chilean Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he was shot because he opposed the military blocking Allende becoming president. And so the CIA worked with coup plotters whose whole idea was that they would kidnap this guy and secretly take him out of the country and get rid of him. Then they'd blame the kidnapping on Allende's people, and they would use that as a pretext to block Allende, take over the government, declare a military government in the fall of 1970. But instead of kidnapping him, they shot him. The paper trail of this operation goes straight up to Kissinger's office. 60 Minutes did a program on this on September 9th with all the documents, the fact that Kissinger was being sued by this family. And then, of course, a day and a half later, September 11th took place, and suddenly, instead of historical accountability being kind of gaining some momentum, putting Kissinger on the defensive for having been involved in an act of political assassination, he was on television saying, as an anti-terrorism expert, and actually saying that the United States should be involved in assassinations around the world, and because that's what would have prevented September 11th from taking place. He appeared not to have known at the time that Bill Clinton had authorized assassination attempts against Osama bin Laden in 1998, and that the CIA had been trying to take him out for 3 years and just had not been able to do so. But these documents, I think, certainly help us. Pinochet is off the hook. He will die in the next, you know, however many years, an old man. But these documents carry a tremendous weight in Chile themselves. Not only did his arrest revitalize the news coverage of the atrocities that took place during his 17-year rule, but the actual evidence from the U.S. secret archives arrived in Chile and were printed on the front pages of all the newspapers, you know, not once, not twice, but many, many times over a 2.5-year period. And now Chilean scholars are using U.S. documents to write books, and our books will come out here in the next 2 or 3 years. I think you'll see maybe a dozen new books on the United States and Chile and what these documents show about Pinochet's human rights violations. And those will all, I think, help to change history and bring some accountability. When these documents were released in November of 2000, we tried very hard to pressure President Clinton to issue an apology along with them, because they were so strong, so dramatic. And the Clinton White House refused to do so. It was a whole behind-the-scenes negotiation and debate and just back and forth that took place in terms of drafting a statement for the president to issue. The State Department officials wrote a memo. We think the president should say that that we're that the United States is sorry. The documents show that we certainly did undermine democracy in Chile and aided political terrorism and turned our back on human rights violations. So the State Department officials sent that over to the White House, and then the specialist on Latin America, the National Security Council, took this and he scribbled it all out and instead wrote in a couple of sentences which were somewhat different. The sentences, which I don't have in front of me, but I kind of remember from the top of my head, basically said the United States obviously contributed to the weakening of democratic institutions in Chile. We put these documents out there for the public to be able to judge the degree to which the United States made that contribution. And that's what the documents allow us to do. Many people are upset that we don't have more, that we don't have legal verdicts. I think the historical verdict, the verdict of history, can be very, very powerful and very, very important. Let me just turn back to the September 11th issue to end my remarks. There are some people, not that many, but some after September 11th, who argued that the attack on New York and Washington, the attack on the United States, was basically the United States getting its due after inflicting such damage on other countries, Chile being prominent among them. That basically this was blowback, payback and blowback for many of the really awful things that we had done with our foreign policy over the years. I didn't subscribe to that kind of argument. There are some connections between September 11th, 1973, and September 11th, 2001. Interestingly, Pinochet's victims totaled about the same number of victims in the United States from Osama bin Laden's attack. But basically, it seems to me that the most important thing about September 11th, 2001 is the fact that it sensitizes us as a nation to the pain and suffering that other countries have gone through, may go through in the future, some of which is attributable or supported by, has been in the past, by U.S. policies. And the degree to which we have felt that as a nation, I think, is important and will give us energy to reflect and try and work harder on our own foreign policies abroad, so that there are no future September 11th in Chile or in the United States. And I think that's the link between the two of them. I thank you for coming.
You were just listening to Peter Kornbluh on The Other September 11th, Chile, 1973. He spoke at the annual Talking Together lecture series at the Wellfleet Public Library in Wellfleet, Massachusetts. This AR archival program marks the 50th anniversary of the U.S. coup d'etat in Chile. Peter Kornbluh is senior analyst at the National Security Archive in Washington, D.C. He's the author of Bay of Pigs Declassified, the Secret CIA Report, and The Pinochet File. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an independent award-winning weekly series. AR features such voices as Robert McChesney, Edward Said, Barbara Ehrenreich, Howard Zinn, and Angela Davis. To access our catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website is alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for the program you just heard, The Other September 11th, Chile, 1973, call us toll-free at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that toll-free number is 1-800-444-1977. Our address, AR, P.O. Box 551, Boulder, Colorado, 80306. Special thanks to Ethel Levy of Talking Together and to John Braden for recording the program. I'm David Barsamian. We close with music from Chile. The Unidad Popular, the popular unity movement led by Salvador Allende, not only had a strong social justice program, but also a rich and creative cultural component. In music, La Nueva Canción Chilena, the new song of Chile, had enormous influence throughout Latin America. Such great musicians and composers as Violeta Parra and ensembles such as Quilapayún and Inti Illimani have left a tremendous cultural legacy. One artist stands apart. That is Victor Jara, a now legendary singer-songwriter. He was an active supporter of the Allende government. Because of his politics and music, he was picked up and murdered during the 1973 coup. Victor Jara now singing Aquí Me Quedo, I'm Going to Stay Here, a defiant poem of resistance written by Pablo Neruda, Chile's Nobel Prize winner in literature.
Patria dividida, ni por siete cuchillos desangrada. Quiero la luz de Chile enarbolada sobre la nueva casa construida. Yo no quiero la patria dividida, ni por siete cuchillos desangrada.
Quebranto.